It's officially 2026, and my New Year's resolution is to prioritize high-quality pieces in my wardrobe. Thanks to Quince, I can already check that off my list. I'm already planning outfits around my new cotton Oxford shirt. It's such a classic, timeless piece that I know I'll be rewearing all year. Need more than just a wardrobe update? Quince has tons of options for the home as well. Maya has had the same dinnerware since college and has finally decided it's time for a refresh, starting with a gorgeous set of ceramic cake plates. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/rehash to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash.
Hi, girl.
Hey, lady. It's a heat wave.
It's a heat wave. A peek behind the curtain, we record these episodes
in advance.
So it might be coming out in November, but we are sweating our faces off right now.
My face is like glistening wet. I don't know, my face has just changed skin types over the past 2 years. I don't know why that is, but now it has more of a wet appearance.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that. I was like, wow, she's grown into such a wet woman.
Ew.
Never mind, cut that.
It just looks hella sweaty right now. I am also just sweating.
Yeah, I'm a very sweaty person. I'm a sweaty legend is what we call me.
Yeah, we did used to call her that around the era of the skinny legend.
I'm less sweaty than when I was a sweaty legend, but I sweat. I can't believe I'm putting this for everyone to hear.
Yeah, we wonder why we're single.
Hey, boys.
How do you feel about having a lot of sweat glands on the body? Does that entice you at all?
Oh my god, just remembered. There's someone from Real Housewives of Salt Lake City who had her sweat glands removed. Because she's crazy.
She has this feud with this other crazy woman on Salt Lake City. It's Jen Shaw and Mariam Cosby. And
the first episode, they feud because Jen is mad because Mary said that she smelled like hospital. And Jen had been at the hospital because her aunt was getting both legs amputated. And Mary was like, well, I almost died on the operating table getting my sweat glands removed. So I'm very sensitive to the smell. If you haven't seen the first season of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, I don't know what you're doing.
If that wasn't a snippet enough of the antics.
First episode, you guys.
And then Jen's like, well, you fucked your grandpa to Mariam Cosby. And Mariam Cosby is married to her step-grandfather.
And she inherited a weird culty church from her grandmother. Her grandmother was married to Mary's current husband. And by marrying him, Mary inherited her grandmother's weird predatory culty church. She's a terrible person.
Yeah, go check the show out. And now on to our show.
Oh, okay, to swerve entirely, Britney Spears. She is our generation's princess of pop. Her career spans more than 20 years, and over that time she's come to represent a vast array of contradictory ideas. Madonna, whore, robot, train wreck, victim, and now, maybe, survivor. Today's episode is about hashtag Free Britney, which proved just how powerful an online fan base can be and how terrifying. Because there's so many details in the story, I relied very heavily on the in-depth reporting of a number of journalists. So up at the top, I just wanted to name a few. They'll all be linked in our notes, but just to shout out the work of Ronan Farrow and Gia Tolentino for The New Yorker.
Those two are truly doing the Lord's work.
Yeah, it's so in-depth, like multiple articles. And Rebecca Jennings did an article for Vulture recently that has also helped a lot with the information here.
Ronan Farrow has my dream brain. What's your dream brain?
My dream brain? I wish I had the brain of someone with wits.
So you're the trickster, like your dream brain is like Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, my dream brain is Bugs Bunny Doc.
Or the troll that lives under the bridge. I'm trying to think of a witty character.
The fox from Dora.
Swiper, no swiping?
Yeah. See, that's the wit I lack. I'm Anna.
And I'm Maya.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomenons that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is about paradigm shifts, moments that change the way we do things for better or for worse. If you like our show and want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, where we have bonus episodes, weekly mini episodes, and early access to our regular programming.
We put out an episode about Justin Bieber and his discovery on YouTube, and I think you guys would like it a lot. I don't know you, but it seems like you would.
We know you. You would. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because that helps a lot. To tell you all who Britney Spears is would be a bit redundant. You know her. She's Britney bitch. I think it would be nice, though, if we could share our own personal relationships with Britney, especially growing up and not outside of the conservatorship.
Yeah. When I was growing up, I was very much under the influence of my sister, who was kind of like an alt 90s kid. She's 16 years older than me, so she was like a fully grown, like late teens, early adult at the time that I was a kid. And so most of the music that I listened to, or most of the CDs that I acquired, were usually from her. Like, she'd either, like, burn CDs for us or, like, give me CDs. I listened to a lot of No Doubt and just more music that she thought was fun. And she really, obviously, one, was too old for Britney, but also just, like, didn't like her. So I never got to listen to Britney at home. But I was very much a girly girl growing up. Like, I loved playing with my dolls, and I loved wearing, like, I loved the concept of belly tops and, like, jelly shoes, and I just had a lot of bubbles in my hair. And so my bestie, I used to go to her house, and she had Britney's entire discography at the time, and so we'd listen to her songs at my friend's house. I very much associate her with my best friend growing up, because that's kind of the memory I have.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
I also didn't grow up with Britney at the time when I feel like she was the biggest thing. You know, I was born the year before she broke out, so I was, like, obviously a baby at the very beginning. And then as I kind of got old enough to know who she was, I think that her image and that kind of pop star was something that, like, my parents weren't very comfortable with. Like, there was a big thing at that time of parents feeling wary about their kids engaging with her and Christina and, like, a lot of the pop stars of the era.
Yeah, people thought that they were a bad influence.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually really started listening to Britney and discovered her when I was probably about 10, which feels a bit late. And it was actually during Blackout.
That is late.
You know, it is. Obviously, like, I knew who she was, and I knew, like, Oops, I Did It Again and Baby One More Time, but I wasn't listening to them. Toxic, I guess, too. But Piece of Me was actually the first time I was listening to a Britney Spears song, which is interesting because that song is so referential to her as a figure.
I miss bad media karma, another day, another drama, I guess I can't see no.
I could just do the whole song. I, for some reason, was obsessed with that song. And I also think Blackout is just hit after hit after hit. Break the Ice, Give Me More. Ugh. So good.
See, by the time that came out, I was kind of like, as someone that at the age that I was like, oh, this is late stage Britney. Because I had listened to her so much when I was so little. That yeah. It was only even in the span of a few years, like, that the Blackout album isn't that far after her original stuff, but it felt like so many years had passed.
The rate at which she was releasing albums when she broke onto the scene, the 3 years that she took off between, like, I think it was
3 years
In the Zone and Blackout was 3 years. Yeah, and Blackout came out, she was like 26, but she had kids, she was married, she was rocking a brunette hairstyle, like, she was different.
26 in the music industry when you're a teen pop idol, you may as well be 58,
like. Yeah, exactly. And Blackout was just a very different style. I won't get too much into it, but I really do like that album a lot. And then Circus, her next album was the first one I bought with my own money. And to me, it felt like defiant a little bit to be into Britney because I wasn't really exposed to her and like taught not to really like regard her as a kid. And then to find her and be like, I actually love this music. Like, I love Britney Spears. And since then, I've become a fan of her in all the stages of her career. But she's one of my favorite pop stars.
Who isn't a fan of Britney Spears? I know. Is the question. I think everyone loves her music, honestly.
Yeah, like it's perfect for what it is.
Yeah. It's very high tier pop music. Like, it's very well produced. That Toxic sample, ugh, so
amazing.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Even Baby One More Time is like, ugh.
Banger.
So I'm going to skip past her origin story and we're just going to go straight to 2008. Can you tell me a bit about Britney at this time? This is post blackout scandal.
2008 is after Britney had her very public mental health crisis and shaved her head, and so she was kind of a laughing stock in the public eye. I think that people viewed her as kind of like washed up and haggard in a way that, you know, like people were constantly talking about her body and being a deadbeat mother and all this stuff, being white trash. And I think that was her prevailing image around the time that 2008 was happening.
Yeah, exactly. As a kid, was that how you were reading her?
Honestly, as a kid, not to toot my own horn, but I always felt a bit of sympathy for her. I remember the day that she shaved her head. At that time, my dad was taking me to his office after school, and I was doing homework in the next door cubicle, and someone had the TV on or something, and I heard it, and I was like, and I just felt bad for her. I don't know. I don't think I ever really lost love for her, fell out of love with her.
Oh, that's really sweet. I was addicted to tabloid culture, and like, honestly, looking back, the most mean-spirited stuff at that time that I wish I could be like, wow, I was really empathetic to her, but I wasn't. I grew up being told that Britney Spears was like this dumb, like talentless pop tart or whatever, and then she had this breakdown and everyone was like, that's her just desserts. And I mean, I was 10, so I'm not really gonna hold myself to a higher standard.
No, of course not.
But I definitely wasn't critical of it.
No, I don't think I was extremely critical either. I don't think I was engaging with it critically. I think I was just like, oh, something's happening, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really did feel like it was framed as if she had gotten her comeuppance for being such a dumb whore, basically. Like, that was the way it was painted.
Or, like, flying too close to the sun, almost. From the get-go, Britney has been operating like a workhorse. She's been working in show business since she was a kid. And since becoming a pop star, has been making a lot of people a lot of money. And this has obviously begun to take a toll on her. So we're in 2008. After releasing 4 albums in the course of 4 years between 1999 and 2003, she doesn't release another album until 2007 with Blackout. So it was actually a 4-year hiatus. During that gap in her discography, Britney has fallen from grace in the public eye. The tabloids have been documenting everything. So her frequent partying with other 2000s bad girls.
Bimbo Summit.
Yep. Her and Kevin Federline's marriage and divorce. And any parenting faux pas she makes as a new and fairly young mother.
Also her wardrobe choices. People were constantly talking about the fact that she wore flip-flops a lot. I did a video, which I've referenced a couple times in the podcast, about Fame and the structures of it. And Britney Spears is one of the case studies that we used in that video. And it was all about persona and the way that Britney Spears' innocent Southern girl persona started out as being kind of like a Lolita, but then that Southern girl persona then morphed into this like white trash persona that she was viewed as in the public. And the same thing that kind of got her to where she is then became the source of criticism against her.
Yeah.
In a way.
It's kind of like at the end of Adrian Lyme's terrible adaptation of Lolita, there's this shot where Humbert Humbert goes to visit like a now 17-year-old Lolita, and she's pregnant and she's poor and she's living with her husband, and she doesn't look the way she did when he loved her. And then he has this flashback where he sees her again as the nymphette Lolita, and he's trying to make amends with the fact that he's no longer attracted to her in her current state. And it feels like kind of what we did with Britney.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think we characterized her as washed up far before her time, and it's like
and like didn't want to take responsibility for how we previously looked at her and treated her would have played in whatever state she was later on.
No, because this was the time where if you're a woman and you're slightly sexual or you appear to be sexual, everything is your fault. Everything was Brittany's fault at that point. And there were, like, no depths that people wouldn't stoop to comment on her. In the video, I featured this clip of Sarah Silverman at the 2007 VMAs right after Brittany left the stage, essentially talking about how Brittany used to be this cute little girl in slutty clothes writhing around with a python, and now she's this, like, washed up mother with these, she calls Brittany's kids mistakes, like two adorable mistakes. They're just as cute as the hairless vagina that they came out of. Like, just absolutely despicable comments. And it's like, that was like the one of many clips that we featured. Oh my God. I do really think of the 2000s as a dark ages for the culture. Like, I think the 2000s literally stooped to depths that are
depraved.
So depraved on so many levels.
Yeah, like, in honestly, in so many facets, the 2000s were an insane time and a crazy time to grow up in. And what's clear from all of this, although no one gives a shit about it at the time, is that Brittany is struggling with her mental health throughout all of her documented mistakes or changes or whatever. And she's lost custody of her two very young sons to her ex-husband, in part due to alleged substance abuse. The paparazzi are tormenting her to the point that, yeah, she had to shave her head the year before in 2007. And she starts hanging out with a man named Sam Luftfi a few years earlier. He was clearly the inspiration for The Weeknd's character in The Idol. He moves into her home, starts calling himself her manager. And this is at a time where Brittany is semi-estranged from her parents and has fired her longtime manager, Larry Rudolph. And so Luftfi kind of comes in and he's encouraging her to let loose, spend her money, is inviting the paparazzi into their home. And it's concerning. Brittany is 5150, which means she's put under forced psychiatric observation twice at the beginning of 2008. The first time is because she refuses to hand over one of her sons after a visitation and hides him in a bathroom with her until the authorities step in. I remember this from the time. And then the second time, which is later that same month, it's a bit less clear why she was 5150'd. Some say it was because she was refusing to take medication, while others like theorize that it was to isolate her from Luftfi, who her parents were scared was trying to swindle her out of her money, essentially.
Their money, you mean?
Yeah. So she's held at the UCLA Medical Center for 7 days. And during this time, her parents, Jamie and Lynn Spears, along with this Christian business manager named Lou Taylor.
Okay, we have to talk about the atrocity that is naming your child an amalgamation of both of your names.
Yeah, Brittany's little sister is named Jamie Lynn Spears.
That is like a tragedy.
I know. It is pretty horrible.
That's grim.
Her parents, along with this Christian business manager named Lou Taylor, start taking the steps to get Brittany placed under a temporary conservatorship. A conservatorship is when someone is appointed by a judge to be in charge of the finances and or personal life of another person who is deemed mentally incapacitated to make decisions on their own behalf. And you can have a conservator of the person or a conservator of the state. Lou Taylor, this lady, she actually has a history of trying to get famous women under conservatorships.
What the fuck?
She was apparently pushing Lindsay Lohan's dad to put her under one and was trying to do something similar for Courtney Love, who also had a weird connection to Sam Luftfi. Like, she keeps appearing in this.
Whoa, what if Sam Luftfi and this lady, actually, I don't want to spread any conspiracies.
They're opposite teams. While Brittany is in the hospital, the conservatorship is put in place by Judge Reva Getz. Apparently, it takes about 10 minutes, and people who are asked to testify say that they didn't even get the chance to. They also mark on a box somewhere that Brittany has dementia.
That is insane.
I know. And her conservatorship ends up being one of both the person and the estate. So they're both under control. Jamie is made co-conservator with lawyer Andrew Wallett, and Sam Ingham is appointed by the court as Brittany's lawyer. While she's still in the hospital, Brittany attempts to choose her own lawyer with the help of Sam Luftfi, who, for all of his weirdness, did make a lot of attempts to try and get Brittany out of this situation over the years.
So when they were trying to paint The Weeknd as maybe good and maybe bad in The Idol, were inspired?
But basically, like, the lawyer is told that Brittany's unfit to hire her own counsel and he can't come on. Brittany gets back to work very soon after she's released from the hospital, and she even puts out an album, Circus, later that year.
I also remember around this time, what the overriding public assumption was that she had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. It's hard to find out if that was actually what happened. It sounds like what they did was put her on lithium, which is a drug used to treat bipolar disorder and psychosis, essentially. But that was something that I remember because that was the first time I learned about bipolar disorder. And it's unclear whether or not she had actually been diagnosed, at least from my recollection, or if that was just the public's understanding of what had happened with her.
Yeah, I've heard a bunch of stuff, like people assume she struggling with substance abuse. There's been stuff about how she had postpartum depression.
It's just unclear what was going on.
Unclear, yeah. And I don't want to say one thing for sure, but yes, that is another thing that was part of.
I'm also kind of like, put anyone in that situation and they will be mentally ill. I don't know.
Like, yeah, it's like, exactly. They
will develop some sort of mental illness regardless because the circumstances are so severe, you know?
Precisely. Yeah. So yeah, she gets back to work very soon after she's released from the hospital. She puts out Circus later that year in 2008. Again, like Circus, the main theme is that she's in a show and on display. There was so much music that was meta and like referential to her life at a time when she still wasn't in control of it.
Oh yeah, I will admit I really don't like Circus, the song.
Womanizer though, I do like
Womanizer. Womanizer is fine. I'm not the biggest fan of this album, but... But I respect your opinion.
The conservatorship is also meant to be temporary, but it stays in place until October of that year, which is when it's made permanent. So the conservatorship is public knowledge, but I don't remember it being discussed much for most of its duration. I'm curious, do you think it's just because we didn't know enough about it and like thought it was being put in place with Brittany's best intentions in mind? Or were we just generally less sympathetic towards women like her?
I genuinely don't remember the word conservatorship floating around at the time. It's hard for me to remember even how public it was. Because, right, like when people are reporting on these things, they set the agenda for what gets priority, right? So I don't think people were drawing as much attention to the concept that she was in a conservatorship. It was more that she was crazy. And so that was the overriding thing. I think either way, if we had known about the conservatorship or whether how widely publicly available that knowledge was, yeah, I think it's a mixture of us not having the language to fully or the toolkit to fully understand mental health at that time, hating women, and then also I think it was very much painted in a way to make it look like this was in her best interest. Of course, it was also hard to know if it wasn't in her best interest because it hadn't been underway yet. So like only now, years later, we're finding out, after with years on us, we can now look back and say, okay, over those years, this is why the conservatorship was bad. But at the beginning of it, how are you supposed to know?
There's like one instance where we kind of get a crack of it, which is this documentary done by MTV while she was, I think, preparing to put out Circus or like preparing for the tour or something, called Brittany on the Record, which I haven't seen. I think it's hard to access now, but in it she talks about feeling like a caged animal and like she's in jail and like having no control, and you can sense the tension between her and Jamie. There's a few clips of it in subsequent like documentaries about Brittany.
Jamie, her father.
Yeah, Jamie, her father. Actually, Jamie Lynn Spears isn't going to come up in this episode. Sorry. She's been removed from the narrative.
She definitely sold her sister under the bus recently.
Yeah.
But Jamie Lynn Spears sucks.
Is all we need to know.
But we love Zoe 101. Although the entire time I was watching that show, I was like, why is this girl the main character? She has not a shred of charisma.
She's so boring. Also, just generally, like, why do you think the mid to late 2000s just feels so defined by our obsession with the hot mess?
I think a huge driving factor is the advent of reality TV and just this machine of watching real life unfold in the most degrading of ways. I think that has something to do with it. I also think tabloid culture may have been at its peak at this point, so I think that is also part of it. This was also just a time when we're coming out of like at the end of the Disney Channel peak. I think in the 90s and early 2000s is when the Disney star was really coming up, and so I think there was this proliferation of like child superstars in a way that wasn't as big before. Obviously there were child stars in the decades before that, but I think that was then. And so by the time the late 2000s happened, we're seeing these people grow up and we're seeing what the results of the environments that they've been in, the circumstances they're living in, we're seeing that play out in real time. So I think that was also part of it.
Yeah, almost like there's also just a younger class of celebrities.
Yeah, exactly.
Who are more susceptible to things.
Who have been in the public eye since before they were even able to fully consent to doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, it also just was a mean time. Everyone was fucking mean.
Karina Longworth, in her series for You Must Remember This about erotic thrillers, has this whole season about 90s erotic thrillers, and I wish I could articulate it as well as she does, but she really talks about how the 90s became an extremely punishing and puritanical time, especially for women. That's why we have so many redeemed, maligned figures. I think it was coming at the end of the Reagan era, the end of this like uber traditional era, and I think people were kind of turning on, we're just becoming more and more conservative as a culture, and I think the 2000s is when that was kind of reaching a climax, almost like cultural conservatism.
Yeah, but then at the same time, I think if we're talking about presidents, the Clinton administration and the Lewinsky scandal, Maya did a video on the year 1999 for film, and I remember doing research, reading a book on that year in film, and the Clinton-Lewinsky scandal being brought up, talking about like American Beauty, which also, it's like this idea of American societies on a downgrade too. Things are just becoming more pervert. It's like two things crossing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like an X.
An intersection.
Yeah, well, whatever. With the conservatorship, Britney is under the strict control of Jamie and her managers. So something she can't do, she can't drive. She's subject to frequent drug tests. She's working constantly, but can't access her own money directly. Instead, she gets an allowance. The people who were close to her before the conservatorship are exiled from her life. And so is anyone who tries to, like, help her or, like, you know, give her access to a phone or something. And her phones are monitored, and she's kept on medication.
It's truly so dystopian.
It's actually insane. But then also so old Hollywood. It's like old Hollywood in the future.
Yeah, they're like, this woman is hysterical, put her on drugs.
Yeah, and work her like a dog.
Yeah.
So the first documented use of Free Britney is actually in 2009 on a fan site called Breathe Heavy. Jordan Miller, who runs the site, will write it as a sign-off on his blog posts. Miller is critical of the conservatorship from the get-go, and this catches the attention of Jamie Spears. Jamie Spears threatens to sue him for copyright unless he shuts down Breathe Heavy. And he does, but like only temporarily. And here's a quote from Jordan Miller at the time. He says, "I have been battling with the conservatorship Britney is currently placed under for months now. When I did not conform to the requests and demands Britney's management and father, Jamie Spears, recently put upon Breathe Heavy to stay quiet, they in turn became angry and malicious, launching what I feel is an unjust attack against me and my website." So there were some people aware of the conservatorship. There were people saying things, but those were like diehard Britney stans.
That is wild. I do want to acknowledge the original Free Britney advocate who, in so many words, said, "Leave Britney alone." Chris Crocker. We all made a mockery out of Chris Crocker, and Chris Crocker was one of the early defenders of Britney, and I think echoed a very early sentiment, pioneered the sentiment of freeing Britney Spears.
For sure.
But this guy also is doing good work.
Leave Britney alone was like 2007, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. But I still think that's yeah. An early.
And but somebody has to walk so another can run.
Exactly. Someone has to get beaten down so another can rise up in the ashes.
She strutted the runway, mama, so that Peppa could run.
Oh, my God. Babe terrified me as a kid. That movie gave me the heebie-jeebies.
I've never
I don't know
actually
why.
Seen it.
I think it's very innocent. I just was terrified of it. I was like, this pig can fly.
Babe can fly?
No, I think they like put Babe on like a, I don't know, that movie's disturbing.
I thought it was just like a pig in the city or something.
Yeah, I think I'm mixing up pig with pig. I'm mixing up Babe with Dumbo. I mean, either way, Babe disturbed me.
I'm sorry, just Dumbo, you're like, yeah, the ears, I can get it as a wings, but what in, on a pig's body is
no,
gonna make
I swear
you
to you they
it
made
with when pigs fly.
No, I swear to you they made Babe fly around at one point. Just don't hold me to it, but I'm pretty sure.
Okay. So Britney, who once felt so accessible to the public, becomes this like closed off, unknowable entity, which didn't really concern people because it almost felt like an inevitable response to, like, everything she'd gone through in the past. Were you following her career at all in, like, the 2010s?
Not even in the slightest. Like, I think I was just like, oh, Britney's taking a break from the public eye, or, like, Britney's working on her mental health.
But, see, in the 2010s, she was working. She put out, like, a number of albums. In the very early 2010s, there was, like, Till the World Ends and, like, I Wanna Go, and I can't remember what that album was called.
See, I
just
don't know them.
And she was a judge on X Factor.
Okay, yes. I do remember the judge era, and I remember being like, Britney's better. Like, Britney looks so good. I do think there was, like, it was, like, a bit of a fluctuation, and sometimes we were like, Britney looks like she's doing so well, and sometimes you were like, where's Britney? Or Britney's not doing well.
Yeah, well, it just was, like, so much harder to gauge what was going on with her, like, personally. But, like, since Circus, they were pushing a redemption comeback arc that, like, was able to kind of stay afloat, at least to the public. Obviously, like, the major factor of Britney becoming more reclusive is the conservatorship, but do you see any ways that her trauma of the initial overexposure has influenced the way that today's pop stars operate?
But I think a lot of the pop stars today learned from this period and are significantly more closed off to the public. Like, Olivia Rodrigo, you barely know anything about what's going on in her personal life. I think tabloids are also a bit friendlier these days. I think paparazzi is a bit friendlier these days. At this point, every pap photo you see... Pap?
Pop?
Every pop photo you see is just Jeremy Allen White curated photo shoot. No, but, like, seriously, it's like most paparazzi photos you see are very well composed, like, you know,
it's usually
street photos.
A celebrity who's called to the paparazzi.
Exactly. I think they definitely learned from it. They're very withholding about their personal lives.
Oh, totally.
I don't know if the public has necessarily changed. I think we're just as demanding, but they're just not giving as much.
Yeah, I think there's, like, and maybe, I don't know if this was exclusively a product of Britney, but the pop star feels more of, like, a figure than, like, a person. You don't feel like you can touch them as much, and probably for the better. Like, but I think about Beyonce does not give candid interviews. She gives one, like, once every blue moon. Like, she is so closed off to us, and she wasn't always like that.
You don't have as many of these Barbara Walter figures or like Oprah, where someone will sit down and do a tell-all about their lives. Like, I think that's changing a little bit. Like, I'm trying to think of who matches Britney on the level of superstardom, and I'd probably say Ariana Grande is one of them. And I'm thinking about, like, she has had a significant series of scandals, but it doesn't feel like any of them have knocked her down in the way Britney got knocked down.
And it still feels like you don't quite know her. I don't know, there's something about the pop star that just feels unreachable. Even Taylor Swift, who's supposed to be everyone's best friend, like, there's actually feels like a very strong line.
Mm-hmm, totally. Well, even, like, Ariana and this recent scandal about this cheating scandal, no one even surmised that she could be capable of getting with someone who has a wife. No one knows Ariana.
And it's probably for the better.
Yeah, totally.
So the closest fans do get to knowing what Britney is really thinking is through her social media, specifically Instagram. So we're in the mid-2010s, and Britney has been doing her first Vegas residency, and the contents of her Instagram have caught people's attention. So before now, most of her posts were, like, promotional pictures with pre-written copy. But her feed starts to change. It's a lot more cheesy memes, like your aunt might post on Facebook, inspirational quotes, stock images, low-res selfies, and then videos of Britney strutting around in different outfits.
Miss Britney does have one of the most archaic phone cameras I've ever seen. Her phone quality is so bad, and I find it so fascinating.
Absolutely, and I think it just lends to this general feeling that, like, she's trapped in time, which is really interesting. I'm going to show you, I just took a couple pictures and posts from the Instagram. I'm sure you're familiar, but I'm going to show you.
Some of this content is from, like, 2015, 2017. She's posting the same kind of stuff today, and it just feels like the frozen in time thing is definitely a good way to put it. Like, the clothing she wears is very much emblematic of... And I think this goes for any older person. Usually older people wear clothes that are kind of reminiscent of when they were young, or, like, when they felt like they were at their peak. And I think this evokes that. Like, she'll wear very, 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 very low-cut pants, and then, like, a really, really cropped top, and just have, like, all midriff, which is just so, so 2000s. And this was before that was in fashion, like, you know, 2015, 2017. That was not a thing. just keeping the blonde hair, and she'll have kind of like very leftover eyeliner on. I've watched these posts since she started making this kind of content.
I was going to ask, like, when did you first come across it? Like,
Way back in the day.
2015.
Yeah, probably around 2015. Like, I've been watching this for a while. I don't watch it anymore. It kind of upsets me a bit. But there's just something, and I'm not saying this in a trying to diagnose anyone or any sort of psychology way, but there's just a very manic energy to the posts. Like, we were just commenting. She'll post like 10 times in a day and then not post for a really long period of time, and then post like 40 posts in a day and then not for a long period of time. And it's very extreme. But yeah, I don't know. I have trouble watching them now.
No, totally. There's a line that you're like constantly trying to navigate, I think, about how much to read into them or not, and how much of it is like kind of just kooky and how much of it is sad and how much of it is saying something. And
well, I was listening to this podcast once when all this was happening, this conservatorship stuff was happening, and this woman who was like a huge diehard Britney fan was like, oh, she's just being herself, and she's giving us a little bit of herself to the public, and that's so beautiful. And I'm just kind of like, I'm having trouble buying that this is necessarily Britney's like base personality, and I don't know what it is, but I don't know what it is. Again, like I said, her with the eyeliner, her with the very stringy blonde hair and these outfits, and she just like will spin around in circles.
Even in 2017, she's doing like these fashion show videos where it's just her in different outfits like strutting around her mansion.
Which is like very strange music that doesn't go with the tone of the video. Or she'll be doing these strange little dance routines. She'll do like a little jeté, and they're always kind of, they're very repetitive.
Yeah.
Something about it just feels very manic. That's not to say manic in any specific psychological way, it's just that's kind of the atmosphere of the videos.
And you're not the only one who picked up on this. I think people were at first, like you described before, kind of reading it as quirky. It's kind of weird. They're just perplexed generally. I think it was 2017 when Katie Weaver wrote an article about the fashion show videos for the New York Times. And I really liked this quote. She describes the Instagram as belonging to someone who, quote, has spent decades living the cloistered existence of one of the most successful entertainers of all time and has a limited understanding of what a regular person is like. And I think that was kind of mostly how we regarded it at the time, was like, she's just out of touch. She's just another planet, you know?
Yeah, she's living in her own little world. She just doesn't get a lot of public access. Also, like, people living in these huge LA mansions, it doesn't feel like they're getting around much, just in general, the public sphere. In the town square, you know, they're not hanging out in the town square. It's a very, like, gilded cage.
Yeah, for sure.
Regardless of whether or not you're in a conservatorship.
So comedians and podcasters Tess Baker and Babs Gray are so taken by Britney's posts that they start the podcast Britney's Gram in 2017. Britney's Gram starts off very lighthearted. They're like, the happiest place on earth, Britney's Instagram, and the two hosts just kind of talk about what she's been posting. They joke around and they kind of try to get in her headspace, try to understand what's happening the way that I think a lot of us were when we first saw these posts. They mostly just find it charming about like how basic and dated it is. So they do occasionally mention the conservatorship in the early episodes, but not in any big way. But then they and other fans start to find some of Britney's posts a bit more suspicious, especially when they notice a recurring theme of entrapment. So I'll show you a picture.
So the picture Hannah just showed me, it's looking out at an ocean through like three different sets of stone windows. And the caption is, there's always a way out. It looks like paradise. Yeah, it's just so hard to read what's cryptic and constructed and what is just a little manic. And you just don't. You don't know. Like, you don't know what is random and what is intentional.
No, exactly. This was my kind of internal conflict through a lot of this. But, like, what are your general feelings about this kind of social media sleuthery? Not even just pertaining to Britney, but with how we, like, read into the things that people post or the captions that they write or, like, their behaviors, their patterns of behaviors online?
I think we love a good story, and we love a narrative, and we love like a mystery. And I think that this armchair investigating is mostly harmful. I also think that social media gives you just the tiniest snapshot of someone's life. Like, going back to the whole concept of TikTok and people sending hate to someone for like a 3-second video where they thought that person didn't behave well in the 3 seconds that they watched. It's a similar thing. It's like you're injecting context into something that isn't there, maybe. and leave it to the professionals.
Yeah, I also just think we generally put a lot of meaning into what people post and into, like,
we love signs and symbols, you know, and yeah, we want to be able to extract meaning from signs and symbols, and sometimes something just isn't
there.
Meaningful, you know, but we don't know with this. It's just, it's hard to know.
So in the 11 years since her conservatorship started, Britney has released hit albums, gone on multiple tours, and had a two-year-long Vegas residency.
The death rattle for all celebrities.
Vegas residency?
A slow death rattle.
Not for Erica Jane.
The death rattle. and I repeat.
So in October of 2018, she's announced to return to the Vegas stage with her show Domination. A month before Domination is set to open, Britney announces it's been canceled and she's going on an indefinite work hiatus. She blames it on stress due to recent health issues with Jamie. And then her Instagram goes dark, confusing fans. They start using the hashtag, Where is Britney? And then Andrew Wallet, who has very recently gotten a significant raise, asks to be removed as co-conservator in March of 2019, which fans find very suspicious. Things get more concerning when it's announced that Britney has willingly checked herself into a mental health facility after she breaks her Instagram silence and posts a meme with the caption, "We all need to take time for a little, quote, me time, smiley face." But importantly, it's an emoticon smiley face, which means it's a colon and a bracket. This immediately registers as weird to fans because Britney is known for her excessive use of emojis. People are immediately like, she didn't write this, especially after everything else that's going on. Is there something that, if it were posted on your social media, would be a dead giveaway that you didn't write it?
That horrible sideways laughing face, like the diagonal laughing face.
That emoji?
That emoji that boomers use. That's like, you know what I mean? Like, whenever I look at it, I go, like, that's what it feels like it's evoking. You know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, I use it ironically sometimes.
No, you don't.
I think I said erotically. It's so specific.
It is the emoji that will make you think of a boomer. It's just the crying, laughing, sideways, kind of like a mean laugh. That's what I associate with. It's kind of like a mean laugh. Anyways, if I use that,
red flag will go up.
Someone alert the authorities. What's yours?
I think the use of, like, consistent capital letters. Like, I almost exclusively use all lower cap.
Yeah.
And if I'm consistently just going Y-O-U and not going U, the letter U, or switching between the two, which I do a lot, then I would be suspicious. If it looks like a fancily constructed text.
I frequently think about whether or not us using just the letter U is something that young kids do, like kids who are way more familiar with the internet. Like, I wonder if it actually is a generational thing and that is what's going to age us. I think about it all the time.
Oh, interesting. See, I don't even think about it. It's just instinctual. But then sometimes I do go Y-O-U. Like, I'm not consistent.
If there are no typos in a text, you know it's not from me. Like, unless there's, like, five corrections underneath what I've said, it's not from me.
After this post that kind of makes everyone suspicious, they talk about it on Britney's gram, and the hosts then get a voicemail from a former paralegal who worked for one of the lawyers on Britney's conservatorship. He tells them that Britney was forced into the facility after she refused to take her medication and was caught driving, and that she has been there for months. Britney's gram shares the voice note in an emergency episode, and they post a photo to Instagram that says #FreeBritney. The next day, it's all over the internet.
How popular is this podcast at this point?
I don't know if it's mega popular, but I think the voicemail made its way through the rounds. Like, it just became viral that this specific episode and, like, incident, plus their use of #FreeBritney, like, that just blew up.
Right, right.
Like, I don't think I'd ever heard of it beforehand. So shortly after, they throw the first of many Free Britney rallies in person. And Lynn, Britney's mom, who has long been, like, a sort of passive bystander throughout all of this, also begins to like Free Britney-related posts on Instagram.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I wonder what the conversation between her dad and her mom was before all of this happened. Like, I'm so curious to know.
So Jamie and Lynn get divorced in, like, the early 2000s, and their relationship is bad. She files for divorce 2 years before Britney's born, and then she stays with him. He has a drinking problem. He does not seem like a nice guy. So things aren't great, and Britney is delighted when they get divorced when she's quite young. And then when the conservatorship comes around and it's supposed to be temporary, Lynn, I don't want to be too kind on her because she was still complicit in this, but from what I've heard, like, she was sort of like, okay, it's going to be temporary. If she's going to hate one of us, she can hate Jamie. I'll let him take the reins. Obviously, it didn't work out that way. But even in the article by Ronan Farrow and Gia Tolentino, they speak to Lynn Spears, and she is so scared about someone from her family, like, walking in on the phone call that she's like, I might have to hang up. But she expresses her concerns. So I think Free Britney actually did get to her.
Wow.
Yeah. In 2019, Free Britney was considered a conspiracy theory by many. I'm sure you felt that way a little bit.
I think when they were trying to decode the Instagram, it felt a bit conspiracy theory-ish. But honestly, I feel like I was kind of on board.
Yeah.
I remember being pretty on board from the beginning because it didn't seem that insane. I didn't understand what a conservatorship was, though, so it was hard for me to know what the severity or, like, the magnitude of it was because nothing had come out yet.
Yeah, and no one else really knew the magnitude of it.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I was like, oh, this is bullshit, but it just felt like people doing the thing that they do, which is the overanalyzing the Instagram and, like, latching on to things with Britney, who is, like, somebody who's just been through so much in the public eye that I just felt kind of hesitant about it, is what I will say.
You felt very leave Britney alone.
Yeah, leave Britney alone. It was publicly known that she was in the conservatorship, but like you said, we didn't really know the extent of it or what that meant. And yeah, she had this long documented history with mental health struggles, and the public generally saw her as crazy. And so, I don't know, I think people just weren't thinking about it too much. And we were deep in, like, Pizzagate, QAnon world, and so any far-reaching theories that, like, emerged online were something you had to be a little skeptical about.
Yeah, you have to take them with a grain of salt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially when you're like, she said this word three times, and so therefore, yeah, she's living in a prison. Like, it's just hard to...
Yeah, exactly. So, like I said earlier, like, Lynn Spears does start to get more, like, involved in the Britney conservatorship situation, and both Lynn and Britney show up to court in May 2019, where she apparently asks for the conservatorship to be terminated. Jamie temporarily steps down as Britney's conservator of her person in September 2019, and this is following a violent altercation with Britney's son, Sean. He is replaced with her care manager, Jody Montgomery.
Wait, sorry, Jamie. So Jamie had a violent altercation, yes, with her son?
Yes. And Jamie is replaced with her care manager, Jody Montgomery. But he stays on as conservator of her estate.
Of course he does.
Yeah. So hashtag Free Britney gains more traction on TikTok in July 2020. And it's basically inevitable that it would end up on TikTok. Why do you think that is?
Virality. Like, things spread so easily on TikTok. TikTok also gives you more room to kind of air out theories in a way that's harder to do on Instagram. Like, there's just less of a reach on Instagram in the way that TikTok has. It's a bit more self-contained.
There's just more you can do.
Yeah, and you can also jump on other people's videos, like, with a Stitch feature. Like, it's just easier for things to snowball on there. And it's just younger people on there.
Absolutely. Britney posts a TikTok in 2020 wishing the LGBTQ community a happy pride.
To all my friends at the LGBTQ community, happy Pride Month. You guys bring so much heart, passion, and articulate everything you do. Because of you, I've had the best nights of my life. I love you so much, it hurts. Happy Pride Month. Baby, be quiet!
Uh-huh. All right, I showed you the TikTok.
Yeah, it's very strange. What did she say, baby, I'm recording?
She's like, baby, I'm recording! And then, like, makes her, like, can you believe him face?
Yeah. Except it's more of, like, a baby! Like, it's a bit more of a yell. And she, in all her videos, she just has this very stiff pose where her hands are locked on her hips or in her belt loops.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she is doing that here.
And for some reason, this becomes, like, I think a bit of a meme, but it does blow up. Like, I remember it at the time. And people based off of this are concerned for her, and they comment telling her to wear yellow if she needs help. And then in the next video, she wears a yellow shirt.
Oh.
And I think she might say something about how she's wearing her favorite yellow shirt. And then it becomes like a series, and I don't know how valid all of them are. That one, I'm like kind of like, but generally speaking, I think people were like, oh, she twirled here. Oh, she did this. And it eventually became a thing where people were convinced she was communicating with them. But I do believe the yellow shirt theory.
Yeah, that is a little too pointed.
Then a director who used to work with Britney posts a TikTok where he reads a letter she wrote him in the hopes that he would read it on TV back in 2008. But he didn't. He ended up being fired because he was trying to help her. Did you see many of these kinds of videos on your TikTok feed at the time?
Yeah, I did. I was seeing quite a lot of videos of this subject matter. It was just a lot of people pausing on her videos or like zooming in on her captions and being like, look here. And if you look here, and if you look more closely here, which I was just kind of like, okay, stop reading into her Instagram too much. Like, it's just her Instagram is so erratic that it's like, come on, guys.
You could find symbolism in everything. So Lou Taylor steps down as Britney's business manager in August 2020, and apparently it's because of death threats she's getting from Britney's fans. And then in September, Jamie tries to have court filings sealed from the public, and Britney's lawyer, Sam Ingham, acknowledges the Free Britney movement in court for the first time.
Wow.
So he says, far from being a conspiracy theory or a joke, as James reportedly told the media, in large part, the scrutiny is a reasonable and even predictable result of James' aggressive use of the sealing procedure over the years to minimize the amount of meaningful information made available to the public.
And James is Jamie,
yes.
I'm assuming.
Whatever merits his strategy might have had years ago when Britney was trying to restart her career, at this point in her life, when she is trying to regain some measure of personal autonomy, Britney welcomes and appreciates the informed support of her many fans.
It was just like the realization of parasocialism, but the good kind.
I think it was crazy to have it be confirmed that she knew what they were saying. So the New York Times then releases its acclaimed documentary, Framing Britney Spears, in February of 2021. It tells Britney's stories and reflects on her treatment by the media. It also updates on what has been going on in court and the Free Britney movement. I think this really validated Free Britney in a lot of ways. You watched the film, like, what were your thoughts?
I mean, I didn't love the film. I felt like it wasn't telling me anything I didn't know. I was reading a lot about it at the time. Like, I did feel somewhat like the film was trying to capitalize on a moment, personally. But I was reading a lot of the articles, and I was very fascinated. And I do think it really legitimized Free Britney.
Yeah, I have similar feelings about the documentary.
I don't think as a documentary it holds up very well. I don't think it's a very well-made documentary.
Yes, I agree. Britney herself isn't a fan of the documentary. She didn't watch it, but she writes on Instagram that from what she has seen, she feels really embarrassed by her portrayal. She doesn't like having her past brought up like that, and it made her cry for 2 weeks, apparently.
I know, I read that.
I know. It really struck me because, like, at this time, we hadn't gotten much direct commentary from Britney. And so the fact that she went out and said this, and like the movie, it played a part in like maybe the public being more conscious of her story and also reevaluating their treatment of her, the media's treatment of her. But I do also agree with you. And I think it's another example of her story like being mined for content.
There were like, I'm pretty sure, two documentaries that came out at the same time.
They made a follow-up documentary, which was, I think, Controlling Britney Spears. I really had a problem with that one. But this first one, I thought it could be an article. It didn't need to be a documentary. And that's where it felt like people were doing things unnecessarily.
They interviewed so many of just like her fans. And I was like, I don't really care what these people have to say. Like, obviously, I'm happy that they're engaging in this movement, but I am also kind of like, I don't need to hear their input in a documentary. It was so fan dominant and not enough other sources.
What was crazy about the documentary is they had one of Jamie's lawyers on, and she stopped working on the case, and then she joined it afterwards. Again, it's that evil woman. They had Felicia, who was like Britney's kind of like assistant family friend figure. Like, I think there was good information from the documentary, but it just felt like it didn't need to become this spectacle. I think it could have been an article, and it probably would have felt less like they were trying to get their slice of the pie.
Well, yeah, and they were good sources, but it was also just a lot of just secondary like journalists commenting on it. And like, obviously you need them in documentaries, but it just felt way too heavy in that direction. to the point where I was like, this didn't need to be made. And also, like, Britney doesn't want this to be a thing.
This is a story about the powers of public pressure. And I think that this brought the story to a wider public and made it taken more seriously than a bunch of people on TikTok and Instagram. And I think that that's the kind of one important thing that it did do. So Sam Ingham petitions for Jamie to be removed permanently from the conservatorship in March of 2021. And then in April, he arranges for Britney to speak directly to the judge, and they schedule it for June. And so in June, the day before Britney is set to testify, she reports herself to the police as a victim of conservatorship abuse. And then the next day she does her testimony. It's over the phone and it's publicly streamed. And this is the first time the public has heard her speak candidly like this in years, and the first time in 2 years that she's spoken in court.
I listened to the whole thing.
Yeah, it was kind of amazing to hear her, and sad to know that she was embarrassed to talk before that point, which is another thing that I think the Free Britney movement did in some part empower her to realize that there was a world waiting for her, like supporting her if she came out.
Yeah, I think it definitely enhanced her support network. I also do think, though, there's a really ongoing through line with Britney's career since the beginning of this push and pull between agency and no agency. And I find everyone seems to act paternalistic about Britney Spears. Everyone, no matter what. Even the fans, even this Free Britney movie. Like, a lot of it is just, she just never feels like we treat her like an adult woman. Like, we always treat her like some helpless being, whether or not it's someone trying to put her in a conservatorship or whether or not it's someone trying to do some activism on her behalf, which is great. And then there was that conversation at the beginning of her career about whether or not she actually had agency over the way she was portrayed sexually. And it's like, there's just this constant conversation about agency when it comes to Britney. And I think her talking about being embarrassed about all of this kind of speaks to that. Like, she's ashamed of how little voice she's been able to have, or like how little control she's been able to have over like literally anything.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just interesting to me that that's just an ongoing theme.
No, absolutely. I think part of it is like so many people feel ownership over Britney. Like, I was thinking about it, and she's beloved across demographics. You'll find like conservative Republicans in the South who probably love Britney Spears, but I also, like, she is beloved by, like, the gay community. She represents different ideals to different people. She's kind of like a mirror, and
totally, and also it's just the crux of parasocialism is feeling entitled to a person you don't know, feeling like you have control over their narrative, feeling like you can dictate the path of their future based on what you want for them, you know?
Yeah. She, in the phone call, like, she relays a lot of, the, like, the terrible details from the conservatorship, and also does confirm some of what the paralegal says to Britney's gram. She says that she was forced to do a tour in 2018 and then forced to go back to Vegas. She said no to a dance move in rehearsal, and that's what triggered them saying she could cancel the Vegas show. And when she did, they took her off her normal medication and began putting her on lithium, which she hated. Jamie sent a woman to do a psych test on her over the holidays in 2018, and afterwards he told her she failed and had to go to a rehab program, which was when she went to that mental health facility. She says they were making her go to therapy 3 times a week when she didn't want to, and she reveals that she had an IUD that she hasn't been allowed to take out.
Yes, that is legitimately one of the most fucked up aspects of this whole story.
It's horrible. It's like dystopian.
It's forced sterilization, I know. Essentially. Not to the extreme degree, but that is a form of sterilization.
Yeah.
You know?
And this also, you know, it does further validate, like, the feelings of fan sleuths and their analysis of Britney's posting, specifically the emoticon meaning something in the end.
It is crazy that that actually was realized.
Yeah. Britney was making a lot of the content she posted, but she used a company called Crowdsurf, which would do the actual posting for her. And Crowdsurf would also flag things that felt too sensitive for Britney to post, probably including anything about the conservatorship, which could back up the idea that she was having to send signals to fans, like wearing the yellow top. Again, probably not all the time. I don't think it's unfounded.
I really wonder what the benefit of CrowdSurf is, just kind of like a PR thing.
I think it's just like probably a third party to make sure what she's posting is okay.
Legitimate. Was she choosing to do that, or was it a conservatorship that was making her use CrowdSurf?
I would assume it's a conservatorship. Okay, yeah. I mean, they control everything she does on her phone.
Right, so they're trying to filter what she's posting.
In her testimony, Brittany compares her situation to sex trafficking. And this is not critiquing Brittany for using that phrase, but just generally, like, why this specific phrasing can be dangerous.
I think it's tough because what happened to Brittany could, by definition, count as human trafficking. Like, it's a very vaguely defined phenomenon. It's essentially like the movement or apparently the harboring of a human being with the intent of exploiting them for commercial profit or for profit in general. And that is more or less what the intention of her father doing this conservatorship was. Like, mm-hmm. when you really break it all down, it's like, yeah, this man just wanted to make money off of his daughter. Like, that is what was going on, and forcing her to do it like an animal. But again, like we've spoken about in the series, there is a lot of heat surrounding the concept of trafficking, especially in the United States, which is a very conspiracy theory friendly country.
Yeah.
And the overinflation of sex trafficking statistics harms sex work.
It is a far-right QAnon dog whistle. And then, you know, Rolling Stone reported in 2021 about how the Republican Party was using Britney as an example of big government ability to control and censor its citizens, despite the fact that, like, this is a very specific story about the unfortunate overreach of the law, I guess.
I think it's, like, there's nothing wrong with her likening it to trafficking. It's more just the concept that the word trafficking is kind of a bit of a landmine, and yes. and it's very easy for it to blow up and to
attract the wrong people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And to be portrayed as epidemic, and to be portrayed as like an actual crisis that actually isn't happening. Like, this is a very individual situation, very specific. Obviously there's an issue with conservatorships more widely in the U.S., but it's not an epidemic.
No, especially not in this specific case. Most people in conservatorships are not being made to work on international tours and multi-year Vegas residencies.
Yeah.
So in July 2021, Britney's career-long manager, Larry Rudolph, and her lawyer, Sam Ingham, resign. Lynn asks for Britney to be allowed to pick her own counsel. And she is, and she's allowed to pick Matthew Rosengart as her new attorney. Matthew Rosengart is kind of hot, that's just a side note. He tells the court he wants to terminate the conservatorship, and on the same day, Britney uses the Free Britney hashtag for the first time.
Wow.
On September 7th, Jamie files a petition to terminate the conservatorship. Rosengart believes it's to save his own ass amid all the allegations against him.
Obviously.
Yeah. Jamie's petition came after Britney's team wanted to go into discovery and deposition, where a lot of information would come out. Later that month, he's suspended as conservator, and Britney thanks Free Britney on Instagram. On November 12th of 2021, Britney's conservatorship is officially terminated.
Yay!
Or was it? I don't know about you, but I still get TikToks every once in a while arguing why Britney isn't free.
Yeah, no, I'm still seeing people dissecting her Instagram content. I mean, the content hasn't changed much, which is kind of fishy.
Kind of fishy.
Unless she is just like that. Like, I think some people have a little bit of trouble reconciling that Britney might just have that vibe. Like, that she isn't who she used to be. She has changed significantly. Yeah,
who would be?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have trouble reconciling with, like, they might not like who she is now. Like, they might not love what her current personality is, and they don't know what it is, but they don't seem to be liking what they're seeing. Like, I've seen a lot of people being like, I wish you wouldn't wear that eye makeup, Britney. It's so unattractive. I wish you would wear more natural makeup. And it's like, I think people, and they were right the first time, so it's like, it's hard to say this, but I do think there is an element to it where people would prefer that none of this is real and that it's all constructed and she's trying to tell us something, than to believe that maybe this is just the content she makes as well.
Yeah, you'd think that they would.
Even if she was trying to send messages, she might also just like dancing as well.
On that note, in August 2023, Rebecca Jennings reports about a divide that's taken place in the Free Britney movement for New York Magazine. So that was like last month. This is where the story becomes more and more similar to QAnon. Last year, Britney and her long-term boyfriend, Sam Asghari, get married after not being able to under the conservatorship. Some Free Britney supporters think it's fake, or at least that the wedding was. Obviously, this is now even more dubious as they're now getting divorced and Asghari isn't looking great. But to transport us back to like last year, have you seen the wedding photos? So I'll show you some, but first I'll just describe, like, the wedding takes place in Britney's home, the same home she's been in for years under the conservatorship. It's really intimate, and there's a weird array of celebrities that she invites, some of whom she doesn't know. So Selena Gomez, Madonna, Drew Barrymore, Donatella Versace,
Slay,
Paris Hilton, Ansel Elgort.
That's the weirdest one. These all made sense to me other than him.
But if you listen to, like, interviews of people who were at the wedding, Drew Barrymore is like, it was so intimate. Like, her kids weren't there. And her ex-husband of, like, a day, Jason Alexander. No.
Sorry.
No, his name is also Jason Alexander.
Sorry, huh?
She was married to her childhood friend, Jason Alexander, for a day. They got married in Vegas, quickly annulled it, back in the day.
Right.
He tries to break into her home the morning of her wedding. Because he's, like, scared for her or something. It's just all weird.
People are worried that there's some covert operation to, like, put her back under control this marriage.
Or they're just like, it's sus. And
I've seen people say that the husband is working with the dad. Like, he's working to control her. They've, like, pointed out certain videos where he
monitors
her behavior.
Also, he was engaging with Free Britney content from earlier on. So it's just confusing. People think it's weird that there's a lot of, like, low-res pictures of Britney from the wedding and, like, high-res pictures of Sam. It's a weird vibe, but basically what Jennings says is that the wedding and its coverage on TikTok recruited a bunch of people who were not previously part of Free Britney into what is called Free Britney 2.0. What do you make of people who jump onto these kinds of conspiracies that, like, they find online? Like, if you weren't a diehard Britney fan, what is motivating you to take on this cause?
People just love sensationalism. Yeah. Like, and it, also the advent of true crime on social media has also really taken off. We could say it again. We said it in season one, but it's like the true crimeization of Britney Spears's life, truly. And so people want to get ahead of it and do the work of investigating themselves. There's also just like an extreme lack of trust and authority as well, and like the authorities, so people want to be able to do a bit more of a grassroots investigation, I guess.
I don't know, like, why is some random person jumping onto this ship? And I think it's, yeah, people who need hobbies.
It's a game.
Yeah.
It's a game to be like, oh, look what I spotted. Look what I spotted. It's not someone's life. Like, it's not their life. So they can easily kind of jump in and sniff for clues because it's totally fun for them.
And an extreme example of this was in January of this year when Britney deletes her Instagram after a number of posts that concern fans, including one where she posts a car with its make in the caption, and it's a Porsche 911 Carrera. Worried fans end up calling the police to do a wellness check while on a TikTok live stream. And the police go to her house. They say she's fine. Britney releases a statement asking for fans to respect her privacy. But these fans think that Britney's under, like, a new secret conservatorship. Because basically, when Britney left the conservatorship, Jodie Montgomery, her, like, care manager, made a care plan to help with the transition, and this is normal for people who are leaving conservatorships. But Britney 2.0 thinks that the care plan is another conservatorship and that Britney is being held somewhere and someone else is basically pretending to be her. So they think,
oh my God,
it's like AI and body doubles are being used in photos and videos, and that, like, any music she's done since has been from AI. There are TikToks I found of people theorizing that Derek Barry is her body double.
If you don't know, Derek Barry is like the most famous Britney Spears impersonator, and he was also on RuPaul's Drag Race.
And importantly, Derek Barry is a man.
To be honest, in my opinion, doesn't look that much like Britney personally.
He's a very convincing drag impersonator of Britney Spears, but I think there's a lot of people you probably could have gone to for her body double before Derek Barry. Also, like, he's supposed to be, like, 2003 Britney Spears. He's not supposed to look like present-day Britney Spears.
Also, why would Derek Barry want to be her body double? Exactly. I strongly believe Derek Barry would be on the side of the Free Britney advocates.
Or at least have something better to do.
Yeah, Derek Barry has a flourishing career. Put some respect on his name.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So that's just one of them. But basically, like, oh my god, my TikTok is now just flooded with these types of videos. But it's people doing slow-mos or breaking down the videos. But in some of them, they've edited stuff in. Like, they're like, look, there's this person with a different eye color from Britney if you, like, slow it down. And then people point out that it's fake. It's edited in. These posters put this in, like trolls, I guess, but they get picked up by other idiots.
Well, it's like a cottage industry of making money off of conspiracy, yeah. Really. Like a Britney Spears conspiracy cottage industry.
It's just, it's so crazy. And like, yeah, she's still posting the same weird videos that she was posting under the conservatorship. But like, can we really expect her to just go back to normal also after everything?
No, and again, she might just be like this. Like, she might just have a little bit of a weird vibe. I would too.
I'd also suspect that maybe the stuff that she's posting might be older stuff that she's filmed. We just don't know, because she'll post stuff where it's like the same outfit as before. Like, we just don't know, and it just feels weird.
Oh my god, someone re-wearing an outfit that they own? Insane.
Obviously, it feels weird to have basically this story where we know that someone wasn't doing well and it was slightly uncovered by social media stuff. It's hard to just be like, she must be fine now. Everything's fine. But we just don't know. And it's so hard to know what is us being concerned about her well-being or what is us just being curious and overstepping our boundaries.
I think a lot of it is overstepping.
Yeah.
I'm really happy that fans got involved and like helped to bring all this to the fore and raise awareness about conservatorships. I would love to see people put this much energy into like a social cause that isn't just about a celebrity. Obviously, I'm so happy for Britney Spears, and this is like so fucked up, everything that's happened to her. But it is like, wow, people are so much more willing to put their energy into something like this versus like an issue that affects like hundreds, thousands of people, millions even. If you could get people to rally behind other social causes like they rallied behind Britney, that would be so awesome, you know? I also do think, yeah, a lot of it is morbid curiosity and just a generally nosy public. Nosy, nosy, nosy.
Like we said before, one of the paradigm shifts of Free Britney is that it legitimized online fan conspiracy theories. You know, the narrative became about citizen detectives exposing a big cover-up. And in this case, it was incredibly effective, and Britney probably would not be free if it weren't for the public scrutiny to put on Jamie and her managers. And I'm not saying that overly optimistic. Like, I was just trying to see how much impact it actually had, and it really does seem like it did fuel a lot of the change that happened within the case.
Oh, this is a very clear example of the internet rallying together to make a change. Like, it did work. I hate that it gave validity to armchair detective work, because yes. It is like, that is great that it worked in this case, but also it's so harmful almost all the time.
And I was going to ask you, like, what do you think are some of the negative consequences that could arise from it? But
I mean, if you're looking at any TikTok example, like Couch Guy is one great example. There was I wish I could remember her name at the moment. It's escaping my mind, but there was a trans woman on TikTok who made these videos, I think like in her basement or something, and she was dancing and people started accusing her of being a serial killer because they thought she was creepy. And then people started kind of investigating more into her life. And it's just like,
oh my God, I didn't hear about that. That's
yeah,
awful.
It was just gross. And I think TikTok has really exacerbated this culture, really amplified it.
Even thinking about like Gabby Petito.
Yeah, Gabby Petito was another example of that.
And then the other more positive paradigm shifts is
kind of the way it's opened up a conversation about conservatorships and people talking about disability rights too, because I don't think most people knew really what a conservatorship was beforehand. And there are a lot of people, usually elderly or disabled people, who are in exploitative and like abusive conservatorships in the States. And so I think at the very least, it put that topic on people's radar.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it was almost non-existent to people before this happened. And it's really great that now we can actually have a worthy discussion of it, you know?
Yeah, and I think that there was going to be more pressure to kind of reevaluate the powers that are granted by a conservatorship. Even the idea that it's not easy to leave a conservatorship, and Britney's ability to do so was probably strongly based in the public pressure and the exceptional circumstances of her life. If you don't have the power of Britney Spears, like culturally, you can't just make that happen for yourself.
Mm-hmm. It had a ripple effect.
And even in the world of like high profile conservatorships, like Amanda Bynes was released from her conservatorship the year after Britney.
Amanda's a figure that I have so much trouble.
I know.
Even thinking about it makes me so upset.
Yeah.
Just someone that felt so close in our childhoods. Like, she really was my idol. And to see what's happened to her has been deeply painful.
Yeah, and just the public scale with which she was going through it.
Yeah.
And then recently, a story came out about the subject of The Blind Side and how he recently learned that he wasn't adopted by the family that he thought he was adopted by, that, like, that whole movie is
about.
And
who got so much credit and, like, praise for adopting him.
And that he was actually under conservatorship, and this is, like, a new ongoing thing.
So we looked into it, and essentially what it means is that when you're adopted, you still maintain some autonomy as an individual, and also when you turn 18, you retain that autonomy and you are granted more rights. But when you're under conservatorship, you have almost no autonomy, and that can continue beyond the age of 18.
Yes, exactly. And so now he's 37, and he's trying to terminate his conservatorship from this family that received all this praise for all they did for him, were in, like, an Oscar-winning film.
Although people started coming for Sandra Bullock after this happened, and it's like, God, the public is so brain dead.
Yeah, like, truly. Apparently Britney's putting out an album amid her divorce. I have weird feelings about that, about the legitimacy. I don't know. I'm just, they're putting out a book, they're putting out an album, and I will say, as much as I think all of these conspiracies that are coming up now with Britney 2.0 are, like, over the top and very QAnon-y and crazy, I don't know, I just feel weird when I hear about this news about her.
Well, I think it's best to be cautious rather than being like, okay, she's fine, moving on. You yeah. know, like, I do think maybe there should be an open conversation about it. It's just hard because it's like, yeah, this is an adult woman. It's hard to just be like, and she's still suffering. Like, it's just, it's a very, very gray area.
I know. And, like, for all we know, that book was written by Derek Barry.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.